Hi, I'm Justin Lokitz, and this is the Design Shift Podcast, your weekly design guide packed with actionable insights, expert interviews, and bold ideas to help designers at every level lead with clarity, influence change, and shape what's next. In this episode, I sit down with Gregory Stock, a fractional chief of staff, executive coach, design strategist, and one of the most thoughtful voices at the intersection of art, technology, and leadership. Gregory's journey spans nonprofit museums, high-growth startups, and bold civic installations like the Bay Lights. Today, he splits his time between two consultancies, bringing strategic clarity and creative rigor to clients on both coasts. Keep listening to hear why Gregory believes design strategy begins with deep listening, why taste isn't instinct, it's time, and how working with AI demands more human judgment, not less. He shares stories about designing at civic scale, the emotional impact of infrastructure, and how his background in art history turned out to be his greatest design asset. And if you enjoy this episode, be sure to subscribe to the show and the Design Shift newsletter. Thanks for listening. Okay, well, here we are again, as we usually do, have someone amazing on this fantastic podcast, which has also become a newsletter and everything else. In this case, I want to welcome my good friend and fellow alum, Gregory Stock, to Design Shift. So Gregory is a fractional chief of staff, a senior design strategist and executive coach who's partnered with growth stage startups and mission-driven organizations, Fortune 500 clients, to bridge the gap between strategy and creativity. There's a lot there. He's also, as I mentioned a moment ago, he's a graduate of CCA's design MBA, and specifically for him, he focused on strategic foresight, so futures, where he helped shape brands, digital experiences, and social impact initiatives across industries, from everything from prop tech to clean tech to art tech to public health. And that's just kind of how I know Gregory. Like, there's a lot going on there, and we're going to get into it. So Gregory is passionate about storytelling and mentorship and designing futures that are both imaginative and practical. And here we are. Welcome, Gregory. Thanks for being on today.
Thanks, Justin. It's always good to see you.
And also, by the way, he's a scuba diver. And so we were just mentioning he was in Miami. So amongst all those other things and working in prop tech and art tech and sustainability and design, and there's a cross section because he also is a scuba diver. So, and a Pisces, apparently. So here we are. So I want to put it out there. I just read this intro to you. There's a lot there. And I want to start by saying this, that I thought I was a busy person until just a few weeks ago when I saw you. I thought I was a busy person, running a program and doing a bunch of consulting, until I learned that you are the chief of staff for not just one design firm, but two totally separate design firms, also doing consulting, also doing all kinds of, family obligations and everything else. Tell us, what's the story here? What do you do? How do you do it? How do you make sense of the things you actually do on a daily basis, Gregory?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, one of the things I think between two agencies fractionally, it's a little bit market driven. I think we've really seen over the last, it's been 10 years since I did the DMBA, but really looking at enterprise, if you like kind of chunk it down about where a design strategist might show up, or even a foresight analyst or a creative strategist, you have some choices, but there are not that many. And you have to start designing your life about, I think we all learned coming out of the pandemic, now 5 years out, what are priorities for people? One of the priorities for me was to be in New York City, which is a very different choice. Still working remote. One of the agencies is based here in New York City, and the other is fully remote, where a lot of my clients are still California and Bay Area based. And so this idea of like remote work versus showing up in an office 5 days a week, we've all got these different priority levels where I really wanted to be in New York City, and I've designed my life for that. And so again, a little bit market driven, like I think fractional work was always something over the last 20 years, but now you can really show up for these agencies in a way that works for both the agency as well as like what I'm designing and for what I want my personal life to be, which has been, you know, it's hard work. It's harder work than, you know, a corporate enterprise job.
Yeah. And I'm hearing design in there, right? Designed well, I'm guessing, right? I'm going to put some assumptions out there that it's also rewarding because you can design what you need to do and do what you want out of that.
I think I love showing up for my clients. I think that's again, that intimacy about showing up for clients and consulting work, and especially more fractionally, you build a deeper relationship with them, which is more rewarding. I believe.
I love that. Well, tell me, what are the two agencies that you are running basically?
Yeah. So Secret Sauce Design actually co-founded by another DMBA alum, Weston Ficker. Yep. Been in operation for about 8 years. How I've shown up for Weston is in a lot of different ways. I was a senior design strategist, now moving kind of more into a chief of staff role. We've completed over 40 brands. So this is a digital branding company where we'll do initial brand mark, colors, typeface, website as your biggest piece of real estate, maybe, but also how that brand is expressed through design. So collateral, conferences, physical design as well. And so how I've shown up is that from like a business development standpoint as well, built a really great pipeline of clients and, you know, that initial website, that initial kind of brand to the world. So really focused on seed funding as well as like Series A.
Yeah.
How can we design a brand that you're going to grow into and breathe life into? But that's Secret Sauce Design. And I've been with them on and off for over 5 years and have touched most of those 40 brands in the past. And then the second agency, which is more product focused, so definitely not as design heavy in the sense the kind of standard design, but we actually design products for more legacy, like universities, more SaaS-esque products. So that's called Swarm Agency, and that's based here in New York City. And that was founded by Nate Cooper, who is actually a UX professor in the CUNY system. And so supporting him in how he's kind of designing his product, like what the service for the teams.
Yeah.
So but very New York specific, New York agency based.
Love it. What is design strategy to you? Maybe we can even break that down a little bit. What is design and what is design strategy then to you?
I think, you know, design has been with human history from the very beginning. So I'm an art history geek. So from what is design means a lot of different things about what museums collect, or graphic design versus furniture design versus architecture and built environments. So when I think of design, it is a very diverse and interdisciplinary space. Where again, people would ask, like, oh, you identify as a designer.
Yeah.
It's actually the first residency in innovation. I was like, oh, I'm not a designer. Don't give me that title. And the professor actually mimicked back or mirrored back. They're like, well, you actually approach problems in this way.
Yeah.
And that's what designers do. And so that's where I think design strategy comes in is it a design problem? And being able to qualify what that problem that you're trying to solve, and how might design be, is that designing an organization? Is that designing a system? Is that designing a logo mark? Is that designing a new product or feature? That's, I'm always asking, like, is this a design question? And how might we use our design toolkit to create solutions?
That like what you're saying echoes there's a somewhat I don't know famous but quote by Charles Eames, right? Ray and Charles Eames, the super famous designers. And it was an interview with a French media outlet, and she asked, "What's the nature of design?" And his response was, "What's the nature of problems?" Something like that. In other words, if there's a problem, we shall solve it with design. And it sounds very much like, yeah, if I see a problem or a question, I shall look at it from a design angle, something like that.
Huge influence on me.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Charles actually taught at Washington University in St. Louis.
Yep.
I'm from St. Louis, and kind
Yes.
of always loomed large in the St. Louis Art Museum. Again, a lot of people know the Eames from, designing furniture, but they actually designed media.
Everything, yeah.
The Powers of Ten
Yep.
is one of the most influential films I've ever seen, and that actually starts in a small Chicago suburb of a people on a picnic. You can find it on YouTube,
That's
Powers
awesome.
of Ten.
Yeah.
It was actually to educate like sense of scale,
Right.
and it goes all the way out into the
Right.
universe and then comes back into the
And
body.
our
But
connectivity
yeah,
with
you're welcome.
everything and so forth and so on. Yeah, it's a favorite of mine too, and it reminds me I need to send that out to the DMBA so they can see it again.
Yeah,
Thank
Powers
you
of
for
Ten.
that. Powers of 10. I mean you mentioned you are an art history junkie. I think you kind of came from that too. You've got an art background. What drew you then into this world from an artist, right? And sort of this art history background. What drew you into design and strategy that now has cemented you as a design leader for different organizations? Where did that come from?
I hope so. I wanted to be an art museum director,
Yeah,
Justin.
okay,
Like,
yeah.
I wanted to direct a art museum, and I really saw like nonprofits as this place that needed and still
Yeah.
needs a lot of good leadership. I think there are a lot of good leaders, maybe mid-level, but again, nonprofit workers are getting paid less, and it's more difficult than ever. And for me, as a single person coming up in art museums, I really wanted to expand not only my education but my skill set and how I approach problems. I felt like I was pretty siloed in how I was solving problems at that point. And so I really came to CCA in the sense of like the historic art history legacy of like Joseph Albers and like artists that went to the Black Mountain College
Right.
and came through like the great San Francisco and Oakland tradition of ceramics and furniture in that Bay Area. Because I had been in San Francisco already and knew this great legacy of artists. And then I found the DMBA and I was like, oh, it's this cross section between leadership, like executive leadership, and design. And it felt like it really spoke to this leveling up that is non-traditional. And I've always been non-traditional. I think even the idea about learning in a museum that one could learn from a museum is really an American idea from the 1970s.
Yeah.
So it's actually relatively new
Yeah.
that we think that we could go into a museum and learn something. And so for me, like tech and this next, like all the artists that I love would always be like, they would be pro AI. They would be pro the next evolution. They
Yeah.
would be working on it, trying to break it, trying to use it, trying to interact with it. And I think that's just, it naturally kept being like, as I got more comfortable in myself, I was like saying yes to this, how might design scale? And that immediately took me to digital technology and startups and yeah, to build.
I think it's profound, right? And it's, yeah, what you're saying really is they're one in the same because artists aren't just throwing paint on canvas or here I've got a Calder behind me, right? He's not just making mobiles because it's a fun thing to go on a ceiling or to hang from something or whatever. It's a design problem as much as anything, and it's a design problem to get people to look into it, read into it, learn something, be introspective, whatever. That's kind of what I'm hearing from you. Is that right?
Alexander Calder was an engineer.
Yeah, he's an engineer. 100%.
Yes. He was sort of, his dad told him, like, you're going to go be an engineer.
Yeah.
And he was like, he had to go to engineering school. And you hear people, especially in your personal journey. And for me, I never thought you could work in an art museum. And then I found that I could work in an art museum. Because, like, even in undergrad, if you don't, this is also, like, design strategy. If I would have heard that, you know, it's still a relatively young, new kind of approach. And we're still breathing life into it. We're breathing, you know, we have examples of how this can be applied well.
Yeah.
And so I think from that traditional modality or traditional pedagogy of what you learn versus, like, I learned in my undergraduate to ask questions. In the DMBA, I learned how to ask better questions.
Yeah, yeah.
You're always trying to learn how to ask the right question.
Yeah.
Because we need to guide our clients and ask.
Right. Well, that leads me to, you know, down this path, and you're leading me down this path with, you know, you mentioned there's lots of examples of design strategy. Do you have a good example of where design strategy has been used to save the day, win the day, create something, something from your personal life, your professional life, something like that?
Well, my favorite example, and I talk about it all the time because I'm just really proud of it, is like the Bay Lights, which is on the west span of the Bay Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually working for Illuminate, which is the nonprofit that was helping with the Bay Lights. Leo Villarreal is the artist based in New York City. But the Bay Lights, people are like, oh, it's lights on a bridge. Sure. But it's lights on a very specific bridge. The seventh longest bridge in the world. Color Kinetics and Ben Davis and Leo Virel and the team at Illuminate designed an entirely new light. And there's been four iterations of the light for that sculpture. And that's design. And that, you know, the constraints of saltwater and birds and the fog, like, it was one of the most exciting design challenges I had ever got to, like, witness and be a part of. And it was this thing that was experienced by 50 million plus people over 10 years and now is eventually coming back. But when I think of, like, scale and, like, impact and awe and, like, social impact, and that sculpture changed the way that Caltrans took care of the bridge. How might art or design change the way that we take care of our infrastructure, that it highlights and it is specific to that space.
Right.
And so it's just something that I'm really proud of. And I think design, that whole process of something, doing something impossible, that applies to all of the technologies that I've been, you know, part of. I use that same kind of, like, this isn't impossible. We just have to find the right way.
I love that. And I love your connection with that to basically to how we take care of this asset. Funny enough, like, we would have intersected at some point there. I was working at Autodesk at the same time. And so, right, we were partners in that. And I was in the infrastructure group. And so we were sort of connected with the Autodesk labs folks, with, you know, that were helping 3D print the thing, the little holders that
bridge.
Were, you know, the bridge.
Yeah, the holders.
And the little light holders, whatever, fasteners. So I remember that, but I never really thought about it that way. You know, I certainly thought about it as a design challenge because I was sort of tangentially connected with the teams that were thinking about this, but specifically little fasteners. And how do we print the right fasteners and then iterate and iterate and iterate until we get the right infrastructure, basically. But what you're saying is, yes, and that was part of a whole, and it's changed our perception of this huge piece of infrastructure and how we maintain it, the conversations we have about it, all of those things. That's huge. Yeah, I love that.
It's huge, and it's emotional, it's physical. It brought so many different communities together, from technology to fine art
Yeah.
to tech leaders.
Yeah.
Like, what is unique about innovation there?
Yeah.
And again, people are like, oh, it's lights on a bridge. And I'm like, I think about all the work and connectivity and communities that came together to learn from one another.
Right.
And I think about one of my favorite books about design and creativity is called The Gift by Lewis Hyde. And it's about communities coming together, sharing knowledge. It, kind of what we're doing right now, we share knowledge and learn from each other and keep that iterative process. And, you know, people can say, oh, like it was millions of dollars, but like that knowledge and community knowledge transfer
Yeah.
across different companies and nonprofits and that community, that's invaluable.
Yeah.
And we need things that coalesce communities like that. And you can't necessarily design for that. You have to allow it to happen and continue to cultivate it.
Yeah. Huge. I think part of this conversation then, and certainly your work, this connection all the way from art and your work with Illuminate, all the way to now as a design leader for these different organizations. There's this thing we spoke about recently, which was taste. And this idea that, I think our conversation went something like this, like taste is what separates us, also what separates us from AI, but also what makes us invaluable in our conversations with and about AI and other technologies. And you are a technologist, you just brought it up, right? How would you define taste now as a strategist and as a leader? Is it intuition? Is it pattern recognition? Is it something else? What is taste?
This is time.
It's time. Yeah.
Time.
Tell me
Yeah.
more. Yeah.
You gotta like say, I've been developing my taste since my eldest brother was like, you need to learn what you like and try new things and keep doing it
Right.
because taste is something no one can take away from you. And it's been something that I have always worked on since I was like 7 years old. Like my brother would do this thing and I hated it. He's 6 years older than me. I'd be in the back seat, he'd be driving, and we'd still listen to the radio. And at that point, the songs would just come on, not like you get to
Yeah.
choose on Spotify.
Yeah.
And he would be like, name that band. And I would never know. And it was always so frustrating. I was like, because he's like a Gen Xer and I'm solid millennial, but he had a very specific music taste.
Yeah.
And I got so annoyed that I never knew the answer that I started learning the names of the bands and
Funny.
started to learn about the music.
Funny.
And that I still use that. Like, if I don't know something, go find out. And my brother is a professor. He wasn't a professor then, but again, he's a professor. And that curiosity and that frustration, which is the process of learning, learning is hard and learning gets harder as you get older. That cognitive load is so important for us to grow. And so you have to cultivate that. That's connected to your taste. You have to cultivate doing the hard thing. Do I like it? Do I not like it? Is it somewhere in between? Maybe I'll revisit that 6 months from now. Or, oh, I liked that one thing. What was that? Go back to that. And not staying in those same patterns necessarily, but that curiosity to say, oh, no, I want to know what that was.
Yeah.
You know?
What I'm hearing from you is taste is a learned thing, right? Through time, experience, trial and error. Can taste be taught?
Yeah, I think taste can be taught. I think, again, it's like holding, like, it's also mirroring back to someone. Yeah. I do that all the time with my clients. Like, sometimes in a brand, they can, you know, it's all about story. And I've always said, I was like, I'm just a mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I listen to you and I repeat it back to you,
yeah,
does that sound right? How does that feel?
Right.
Does that feel energizing? Does that feel exciting? And if they don't say, like, if I just reflect back what they just said, they're like, well, say it in a different way. I have to be able to pivot. I have to be able to, like, offer up a different invitation. What if it sounds like this? And I think that's kind of the same thing as, like, taste. I can say, Justin, be like, what's your favorite movie? And you could tell me a movie, and I'd be like, wow, that's really interesting. Why is it your favorite movie?
Right, right. Yeah.
I just like it?
Yeah. No, there's something. Yeah, yeah, there's something.
There's something there.
Yeah, yeah.
And most people are just not asked the right question.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, why do you like that?
Yeah. That's awesome. But also, not but, and ellipses, it also has me thinking that, you know, you're also a design leader, which means you have to manage not only your clients' tastes and really try to best understand those by being a mirror to them, but perhaps other designers' tastes that you're managing on a project. Mm-hmm. How do you manage those varying tastes, right? And I'm guessing they're not always totally divergent, although they might be. But how do you manage other people's sensibilities and taste when it's project basis or something like that?
That's such a good question. Oh, that's so good. I've always said, especially depending on what the project is, like, say it's a brand, like, there's always space. It's just like accounting.
Okay. Okay.
Like, there's always a space for it. And it's also hierarchy. It's prioritization, sure, which a lot of people don't, sure, understand. Like, oh, I really, really appreciate that offer. Let's see where that can come in. You know, again, the design process is like concave and then convex. Like, there's expansive moments and then there's really, really tight moments where you have to make decisions. And so depending on when those opinions are being offered up, I always kind of clarify, like, okay, I'll take that into consideration.
Yeah, yeah.
I never try to, like, again, art and creativity, it's very different showing up where, like, I'm creating something for a museum wall or a museum audience versus I'm creating something that people are going to use.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Is it, like, that's huge. That's so different. Like, you know, again, aesthetic pleasure or an activist point of view, or, you know, an artist painting a picture to convey communication in a gallery wall or in your home are very different than, like, is the application feature effective?
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
Are you solving a problem for that user?
Yeah.
Those are very different. Not to say that they're not similar.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a different approach that, like, I would definitely, I rarely tell people that I, like, have an art history background because people think it's snobby. For me, it's not.
Turns out it's a really awesome bridge. Yeah, allows you to speak about a lot of things, including famous artists and why we like them, probably. Yeah.
And to, like, taste being taught, I use visual thinking strategies. So as a museum educator, this is how you, I do this, this, I use visual thinking strategies in UX all the time. It's, what do you see?
Yep.
You have to say, Justin, what do you see? And then I say, what makes you say that?
Yeah.
That leads, it's kind of like it's a cultivated, curated yes and.
Right, right.
Like, so you're telling me what you see, interesting. Say more about why you're seeing that.
Yeah.
And then you go into, like, let me reflect back what I heard from you. Right. Let's have a conversation on that.
Right.
And you can do that digital technology it's so helpful. Like when you're dealing with multiple designers or you're dealing with a front end engineer,
right?
Be like, how could we make that happen?
Right, right. Yeah, that is, and that it's really so funny hearing you say this to me. It's like, oh yeah, that's kind of when I've been on art tours. I took some art history as well in undergrad, and then I love museums, and I once in a while I'll join a tour. And that's exactly, yeah, what do you see in this? What makes you think that? What makes you, it's like, oh, Gregory, that's such a cool trick and such a cool design trick. Not an art, it's just a design trick, but it's a human trick, which is really, really interesting.
Well, and to your question about multiple designers or different aesthetics or different opinions, it helps you as a design strategist make space for everyone to feel heard.
Right, right.
It's really important in our job is for people, we are listeners. And I think that's been my biggest, because I'm a big personality. I feel like that's the biggest growth in my communication over the last decade is how might I listen deeper?
Right, right.
What is your client really stressed out about? It may not be the thing that you're working on.
Yeah.
And creating space for that and parking lotting it and not taking it personally and being able to filter that, that's all come through trial and error of like, yeah, like I need to listen deeper.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, by the way, when you say it that way, that to me is design strategy, right? That is, I'm not here to design the thing. I'm not here to use my taste to apply the right color, style, you know, geometry, whatever the thing is. When you say it that way, Gregory, it's, oh, this is the design strategy piece, which is, oh, there's a, and you mentioned as well, I want to get into the DMBA stuff. There's the question behind the question. We need to do this thing. Why do you need to do the thing? Let's tell me more. What's behind this that makes you feel like you need to do this thing? Perhaps there are other things that we need to talk about here. And that, yeah, it's like strategic therapist 101. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, both of my parents were in caregiving spaces and I all of my five top strengths and strength finders are all people oriented.
Okay, yeah.
And like, that's what I'm good at.
Yeah.
And I resisted it for a really long time. And it's, you know, now I'm starting to I think I'm just starting to fully harness it.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
Again, out of the DMBA, you would have thought that like, you know, everyone comes in as ambition and like, oh, I had it all figured out. And it's like, no, we're 10 years out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
it's maturing, yeah, hopefully.
Exactly. Well, let's get to before we get to the DMBA stuff, I want to have one more question about taste. Yeah. I would love to know a time where you think your taste failed you in some way. And maybe it's a small way, or maybe it was a nudge or an iteration of taste of some kind. I don't know. But yeah, what was that like? And then how did you recover from that? What was the learning that you took from that?
This is such a good question.
I try. Yeah, these are designed too.
Yeah. I think anytime I've made someone feel bad, like about their opinion.
Yeah.
Like the difference between facts and opinions, I think, are more important than ever in our current global environment.
Yeah.
Like someone's opinion isn't necessarily like, you know, I think for a very long time, I thought my taste was better than. And I would communicate that. And I have realized that's where taste can fail you. Is if you think that your taste is, again, art history or the museum, it's snotty, it's fancy. Everyone's like, oh, Gregor, you're so fancy. It's like, I just want to take you into the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Can we just like get inside? Like the barrier to entry to so many design events or, you know, not only just a museum, but like a tech event. Like, tech isn't necessarily the most belonging space or industry events, like Climate Week here in New York City this week. Like, to be able to get into an event, or even if it's free, like, to feel like you can be part of that space and have something to contribute. I think when I've let my taste supersede or blind me to another person's perspective or insight is when it's failed me. It's blinded me to my own bias.
Right.
Like, and I think taste is biased. Like, taste over time, like, is biased. And owning that bias, understanding the bias, understanding its limitations and constraints is so key to being able to change, being able to adapt,
yeah,
being able to be agile.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to keep doing that.
Yeah. It's great. Well, let's get into some of the DMBA stuff. And by the way, when we first talked about this, I thought, oh, Gregor, we could have this conversation and it could go to our DMBA podcast. It will go to our design ship. Like, this is across all these spectrums. So you were in the DMBA, you joined 10 years ago, or you graduated more or less 10 years ago. How did that program, right, this thing that we're both connected to and how we are connected, maybe we would have been friends anyways, I want to say yes, but how we're both connected through this, you know, design MBA program, how did that shape who you are now and what you do?
I mean, I completely transformation. I would say it's transformational. And I do want to start, though. This is like my claim to fame, though. I was rejected by the program twice.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so they did not see my vision for the future of art museums as being a design strategy MBA executive leadership solution. So I whittled my way in, and it changed everything. I'll be a little vulnerable here. I had a big empathy gap, Justin. I think I was sympathetic. I think I led with maybe pity, but I wasn't truly listening and crafting empathy. And empathy is a muscle.
Yeah.
Empathy is something that is started when you are a child and your parents and your nuclear family and that large family and your community helps craft from 0 to 9. I worked at the Bay Area Discovery Museum, which is a children's museum focused on 0 to 9. Our executive functions are set by 9 years old. So what's right and wrong, how we make decisions, that our brain mostly is formed by then. And I had an empathy deficiency. I self-diagnosed. And the DMBA changed everything. It helped me center other humans and human-centered design. It helped me have a structure that was kind of a interesting enough, curious enough problem. And I had to go deep into that other human that maybe I wasn't the human that was using the thing. And to be a good designer is to build empathy for your user.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that time and time again for different products and different audiences is very challenging and rewarding. But the DMBA trained me to not only recognize where my biases were or where I was feeling deficient, but it started to fill it in.
Yeah.
It started to like fill the cup that like, oh, I'm changing for the better.
I feel like what you're saying there is, first of all, we are, you know, there's kindred spirits here and friends and, you know, alum of the same program. But I feel like what you're saying, I've never really thought about it in that way. Although let's say I've thought about the DMBA as this, you know, it's human-centered design. Right, writ large, and then applied not just to the design of things or design of screens, but also to the design of strategy. And what you're saying here is that this is what we do, right? Is that empathy is the thing. The thing is listening, the thing is understanding, the thing is, the question behind the question that will help us then co-create something with someone else, for someone else, something like that. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and it's really challenging in the marketplace. People don't know why they come to us because they're lost, they're confused, or they think that they have the answer. But why they stay with us is because of the relationship and trust that we build. And doing this work now, a decade in, is it's very hard to sell the service. It's very challenging because people don't necessarily know what the end product is. We want the scope of work and we want the end product. And you're going to have a website. Is it going to be an effective website? Is it going to be a website that grows with you? Is it going to be a website that tells the right story? Is that story need to change 6 months from now? What are the guidelines and constraints that you need to be able to breathe life into that brand and product or company that you're building? And I just know that, like, once they start working with me, then they start to understand in a deeper way. And it's always been the invitation into design strategy, like the mystique of what this is. And I think I've distilled it to, like, I'm going to listen to you better than anyone else.
That's huge. That's so great. What then, if you were mentoring DMBAs today, and you might actually be, and I don't know, I didn't ask you that, but if you were mentoring DMBAs today, or anyone that thinks they want to be a design strategist, right? A designer first and a strategist, business person, concatenated onto that. What does that mentorship sound like? What are you telling them? What mindset shifts are you passing on?
Well, they're already doing something really challenging. So kudos. I think graduate school and learning anything, like even if you do it outside of an institution or not, learning something, choosing to learn something new is, kudos. Awesome. You started that journey. Be gentle with yourself in that sense. And then, like, yeah, identify where you think there are blind spots. We all have biases. It's like our human. Who are you? Just you have to name it and claim it. What are your opinions? What is your perspective? POV. Like, do you agree with that point? Like, perspective. Evaluate it. Put it into ChatGPT. Do what you need to do to identify and, leave no stone unturned because the best thing that you can do for your client or do this work is understand where you can create new invitations and where you have limitations. And I know that no one ever likes to admit that. But once you understand where you start and that client begins, that's where the work is.
I get it.
So I'd say be gentle with yourself, but also, like, know thyself.
Know thyself. And this kind of goes back to your taste as well. Not just kind of, it totally goes back to what you said about taste is time. And that's the know thyself and know why, and then be able to ask someone else why as well, and be present and listen.
Yeah.
It's
Your
big.
job is to know yourself better than your client. Don't judge them. Judge yourself.
So good.
Because the more you expand your world that is unique and interesting, and this goes to taste, like, invite people into your world. And that's where play comes in, that's where humor comes in. Like, create whatever that is. If you speak a different language, if you have hobbies, bring them into your world and see how they're interacting with your world. And then you can start to like do that cultural exchange that right. humans do.
Right.
That is so unique to us as humans, and AI will not do like that. You know, that is that unique thing.
Totally. Let's talk then a little bit about AI. I mean, I'm just going to keep building a couple more bridges yeah. here.
Love it.
How do sort of our taste, the way we work with our clients, strategy, how are these evolving? And you're working in two consultancies, so you're doing this now. How are these evolving in this age of AI where things are hyperspeed, where we're seeing it changes every day to what AI can do, to what the way we need to use AI, whatever it is, what's evolving there? How do we need to evolve?
Yeah, it's like going fast to go slow. Like, know the tool. Like, I don't like to say tools. Like, know what's going on.
Yeah.
But give yourself a break because it's going so fast. And then this is where strategic foresight. We talked about all of these things 10 years ago.
Okay.
And so there's a little bit of like, all the lashback, all the whiplash, all yeah. of this, like, all the cultural dialogue around artificial intelligence is what we were talking about 10 years ago in our classrooms at CCA. Like, we talked about pandemic. We talked about the global politics. We talked about supply chain. We talked about AI and biotech and the rise of biotech. So this is a little bit of, like, know the signals.
But people still need a website.
People still need work product.
Right.
Like, how are you going to design that work product? And be transparent about it. I use ChatGPT. I use Lovable. Yeah. I use Midjourney. Yeah. I'm like, you got to use it, figure it out, try it. I think the percentage of people in tech still that are actually using it is still so low. And they've just made a biased opinion that like, oh, I don't like it, or I don't want it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the pathway to understanding.
Yeah.
In general, I want to understand it. I want to know its constraints. I want to know where it fails. I want to know where I'm failing. Like, it's been, you know, like, I don't always agree with it. And I think this is where also taste is really important. If you do not have a developed taste, it's just regurgitating the same.
Yeah.
It's only as good as we are in conversation with it.
Yeah.
And again, it's not just a prompt. It's a dialogue. It's language.
Right.
And so if your language is limited, you're going to get limited language back.
Right.
And so I'm very pro, like this is happening.
Yeah.
This is a...
Clearly.
You know, this will happen. I knew this was happening beyond my lifetime.
Right.
And so... foresight, like, we don't even really start real talking until we talk about 100 years.
Right.
So even if, like, 10 years, 20 years, 100 years from now, like, I think, you know, it's okay to have trepidation. It's okay. Like, I also tell people, I'm like, if you are really passionate about AI ethics or the concerns around AI, go deep. We need people in those spaces so deeply right now. So if you are interested, go learn, go carve it out, go design the job that does not exist yet, and understand where you can help.
Yeah.
Because we can't just sit idly by. So I'm using it in a very specific way that I feel comfortable in, that I enjoy, that is textured and interesting and helping my clients. And they still need me. They still need designers. They still need motion graphics. They still need all of these teams to provide the work product and build good things and build things that work. But if you are passionate about one specific thing or you're angry about it, listen to that.
Yeah.
And then go do something about it. Because we need design strategists in those spaces to craft the conversation.
Yeah. Well, what are you passionate about then? Maybe you can, you know, sort of qualify this and quantify it. Like, what are you excited about then? What are you passionate about then? It's specifically in terms of this this now, you know, rate of change in AI tools or materials, whatever you want to call them. What are you passionate about? And maybe, you know, I'm going to say, qualify that with it. How do you use it now? And what are you excited about in that too?
Yeah. I'm very, one of the greatest things that humans can do is learn.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited. We're in a very, like, learning is such a challenge as you get older. And I think people are preventing themselves because it's hard. But we need to do hard things. AI is not just making our lives easier. We need to do hard things. And so, honestly, for me, like, I took, like, a Coursera course. It's, like, large language models. Like, I'm not a technologist per se, but I wanted to understand what was happening. What is the root? And once I started to take that course, I was like, oh, it's language. It's how words move. And I love words. I love poetry. I love, you know, literature. And I love the story and writing. And so how do I become a better writer? Is Claude really that much better? Or is ChatGPT that much better? Like, some of it is. Some of it's been good ideas. Some of it hasn't been. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop. And I think so many people are stopping. It's like, no, we got to do hard things.
Yeah, yeah.
Do things that make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's made me uncomfortable. I'm not going to say that, like, all these things, like, it's incredible how fast some of the synthesis are and how sometimes it's off. But I'm, you know, I'm not... Like, I love the podcast, like, Beyond the Prompt. I love having conversations like this. Like, I'm very interested in different people's experiences of it. I love talking to technologists that are building these models, that are interacting with these and seeing the struggles. And I love seeing Johnny Ive, like, get, you know, create love from and then partner in a huge way with OpenAI. And that story, I mean, talk about that video of announcement of OpenAI purchasing love from is the most artistic video, 9 minutes of a conversation recorded. But, you know, that's what's exciting to me. That love letter to San Francisco, like, where I spent 12 years of my, you know, formative 20s, that love letter to the cultural nuance of San Francisco that creates innovation. And that we're on that next horizon line. Yeah. That's what's exciting me. Like, it's a really interesting time that is nuanced. And I think that's one of the things that's maybe frustrating for me is that we're losing nuance. I still care about individual people's opinions.
Yeah.
But is it educated? Did you learn about it? What do you know about these different technologies? And then let's have a deeper conversation about it.
That's fantastic. Well, I don't want to keep, I mean, we've now been recording for 51 minutes. I've got so many questions. We can keep going on. I don't want to do that to you. So I'm going to wrap this up with a couple things. One is, you know, you mentioned you've taken Coursera and you're learning and you're always learning. I think that's, by the way, something that I see most of us that have come from that DMBA land. We learned a couple things. One is that we can do so many things at once and juggle so many things for better or for worse. But we also learned that we can learn so many things at once. What's your favorite book or resource today where you're using that to learn from, to grow, to change, whatever it is? Yeah.
I think I'm probably already mentioned it, but The Gift, Creativity and the Artist in the Modern World by Lewis Hyde.
Okay.
The Gift is substantially, like, it's number one text.
Got it. Love it.
He wrote it in the 70s. So The Gift.
Okay, good. We're going to tell the DMBAs they should probably buy that too. All right. One more question there is, you go into a workshop with your clients, right? And there's the listening part. What's the icebreaker you use? What's the first thing you get people to just divulge their secrets, their visions, their insecurities, whatever it is, get to know each other? What do you do?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things is I love people talking about, people hate this question, but I dig down.
What's a karaoke? What's your favorite karaoke song?
That's great. That's a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also because people probably also love and hate karaoke. Yeah.
Most people actually secretly hate it, which is really interesting because if you double down, be like, well, if you could, and no one was watching,
yeah,
which you probably do, what is the real song?
Yeah.
What's the song that you would really sing?
Right. What's yours, by the way, Gregory?
Oh, Suddenly Seymour by Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, that's great.
By Alan Menken.
Yeah, that's great. Yes. Okay. All right. There you go.
Yeah.
Mine is I've Got You Under My Skin by Frank Sinatra. So there you go. Yeah. Yeah. And that is one that
there
I sing in the car. I was singing every time I go to karaoke. That's my song. There you go.
I like that. Or like My Way too. That's a good one.
I'll do it my way. Yeah, there you go. All right, Gregory. So last question. How do people find you? How do they get in touch with you? How would you like them to interact with you in this cool digital, non-digital world?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is like still like the Gregory Stock on LinkedIn. Yep. You can find me, message me. I'm happy to like, I love meeting in person, happy to do it digitally. That's like a good starter from like a professional standpoint. And then you can go from there.
Go from there. Awesome.
I actually try to limit my social space. So LinkedIn is where I invest time and that's where it's most active. And yeah.
You and me both, brother. I hear you. Any last thoughts? Any last questions? Anything else you want to tell people?
It's just great. Keep listening. Keep doing this.
Keep doing it.
I love these conversations. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, knowledge transfer. Keep talking about it.
That's it. All right. Well, thanks
for having me.
Thank you so much, Gregory. I'm so excited to go back through this, listen back. There's a lot of huge, cool gems in here. And I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Design Shift. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a quick rating or review. It really helps more designers like you find the show, and it helps me make better shows. And if you're not already subscribed to our awesome newsletter, head over to designshift.me. See you next time.